Before we get to today's episode, I just wanted to remind everybody about the upcoming Phoenix Fan Fusion Convention, formerly Phoenix Comic Con. It runs 4 days from May 23rd through May 26th, and there are tons of great guests. Just listen to some of the names. Jeff Goldblum, one of my favorite actors of all time, The Fly, Thor Ragnarok, Jurassic Park. We also have Nicolaj Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones, Ray Park, who played Darth Maul, Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Ranger, Robin Lord Taylor, who is the Penguin on Gotham. We have Adam Savage from Mythbusters, Paul Rubens, Mr. Pee-wee Herman himself, from the world of Star Trek, George Takei, Nichelle Nichols, Walter Koenig, and Garrett Wong. Frodo's going to be there, actor Elijah Wood, from the Harry Potter movies, Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom, Summer Glau from Firefly, and finally Billy Dee Williams, I'll mention, from Star Wars, has a big role in the upcoming Star Wars movie, Episode 9, that's out this Christmas. So again, tons of media guests available for autographs and photo opportunities, and I think it's a really great lineup they have this year. From the world of comics, they have some real legends there. Jerry Conway, Dennis Cowan, Roy Thomas, Kevin Eastman from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, super talented artist Michael Golden, Joe Staton, Neil Adams, Christopher Priest, a very prolific writer, is going to be there, Howard Chaykin, Denny O'Neill, who pretty much ran the Batman books from the late 80s all the way up through the 90s and into the 2000s, also legendary artist Kevin Nolan. There's also going to be creators like David Marquez, who most of you will remember from his work on Ultimate Spider-Man, Derek Robertson, who co-created The Boys with Garth Ennis. There's an upcoming Amazon show focused on that property. We have Greg Land, Ty Templeton, Tony Parker, Larry Stroman, along with tons of other artists and creators that are going to be there. So it's one of those shows that don't forget where their roots are from. There's tons of great comic creators, writers, and they have a great artist alley and a lot of local creators there as well. So I do recommend this show. It's one of those shows I think everybody should do. The tone and the feel of the show is unique. It's something all its own. Tons of cosplayers, a lot of Doctor Who, a lot of Star Wars. So whatever your particular fandom is, you'll probably find something of interest at Phoenix Fan Fusion. Tickets have been rolled back in terms of cost to the 2017 prices. It's only $85 for all 4 days. They raised them last year to cover a lot of the security that's in place. And I think all that's still going to be in place, but they listened to the fans and they heard that, yeah, the prices were a little bit too high. So they're certainly competitive when you compare them to the 4-day cost of a lot of other shows, or the per day cost, I should say. And there's tons of events, tons of stuff going on. They close the streets next to the convention center. There's food trucks out there, lots of covered seating where you can sit in the misters and eat some good food and just hang out and have a really great time. It's going to be fun. As I said, I do recommend everybody getting out to Phoenix Fan Fusion. I'll be there covering it for the Comic Source and LRM Online, and I hope to see you there. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 737 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about The World of Metropolis number 3. It's from writer John Byrne. We have pencils by Wynn Mortimer. Inks are by Dick Giordano and Sal Trapani. We've got Tom Zucco on colors and Albert de Guzman on letters. So this is continuing the Superman chronology that we've slowly been going through here on Superman Sundays with the Byrne era. And for those that don't recall what the powers that be at DC decided to do, since Byrne's series basically started with Superman already established in Metropolis. Obviously, there was the 6-issue Man of Steel miniseries first, which each of those issues focused on a certain character. Obviously, Superman ran through all of them, but that was sort of the retelling, the origin, and we got little snapshots of time of Superman establishing himself. And then when the regular Superman series started, Adventures of Superman took over the Superman numbering. Action Comics continued its numbering, and there was a new Superman title with a new number one. But again, those all started with Superman as a known quantity in Metropolis and in the DC universe. And so there wasn't really an opportunity to know, other than those 6 issues of the Man of Steel series, how Superman had gotten to the place he was at. Like, what was it like when he first met Lex Luthor or Lois Lane or first showed up in Metropolis? What were the reactions? All that stuff was left to be discovered later on, or you picked it up through kind of the context of the story. So what DC decided to do was, in order to flesh out some of the backstory that Byrne had established but they hadn't explicitly shown in the comics, the idea was to show these three different four-issue miniseries, one being World of Krypton, the second being this World of Metropolis, and then finally the last one being World of Smallville. And again, they each were written by Byrne, not drawn by him, but written by him, and they fleshed out kind of the backstory, some of the things that you maybe didn't know, or they weren't explicitly told, or you couldn't pick up from context in the stories. So the World of Krypton series that we already covered talked about the different idea that Byrne had for Krypton, and how the Clone Wars caused issues, and how the planet ultimately exploded. And, you know, a lot of it was things that we already knew from the classic Superman origin, but just slightly changed in little ways. Byrne added to it. A lot of what Byrne did in that World of Krypton miniseries has been used in the current Krypton series on the Sci-Fi Channel. So I do find that to be rather interesting, considering that, you know, the World of Krypton series is actually well over 20 years old, almost 30, over 30 years old now, I guess. So it's been quite a few years since it came out. The World of Metropolis series that we've already covered the first two issues, again, much like the Man of Steel miniseries, they're focused on one particular character or another. So in the first issue of World of Metropolis, it's Perry White. The second issue is Lois Lane. This third issue is focused on Clark Kent. Not Superman himself, but Clark first showing up in Metropolis and going to Metropolis University. And again, it's, you know, it's one comic. It's hard to cover all that time, and I do feel like it's a bit rushed. I think that Clark's college years probably should have gotten its own four-issue miniseries, maybe World of Metropolis U, I don't know. But I really wish they'd spent more time. I think that having a series focused on Clark in college is worthwhile. All right, they did one back in the early 80s called Superman the Secret Years with incredible art by Kurt Swan. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was done really, really well. I just remember it being a fantastic series. So something like that would have been welcome, but I imagine that DC just wanted to give these little snapshots and give us an idea without giving away too much. So let's go over the issue here. As I said, this third issue is focused on Clark Kent. It's called Mr. Kent Goes to Metropolis, and it starts off with these three would-be bank robbers who have stolen a laser drill from LexCorp, and they're using it to cut through dirt and rock and tunnel their way into a bank. So as they're cutting through, all of a sudden they're surprised that the laser ain't cutting no more, and one of them says, well, something's in the way, something stronger than dirt. And as he moves the laser drill, he sees what he's actually been trying to cut is Superman himself. So Superman was on the other side of where they were trying to drill through, and he quickly flies through the small opening that's there, captures these three would-be bank robbers, and they're kind of surprised that he's able to fly underground. I don't know why they would necessarily think that, but when one of them says, you can fly underground, Superman's response is, of course, would you think I was on wires? So maybe a jab or a wink and a nod to the Christopher Reeve movies. I'm not really sure, but I found it to be rather humorous. So as Superman deposits them to the waiting police, they thank Superman for his work. And one of the officers says, I don't know how Metropolis would ever get along without you. And Superman says, well, I don't want to be accused of false modesty, but I imagine you get along the same way you got along before I arrived. And as he flies off, he thinks back to when he first arrived, and it's not really clear that this is a flashback, other than, you know, the drawing of Clark Kent here does, I suppose, try to make him look a little younger. Certainly his hair is a bit more wild and unkempt, but it would have been nice if they'd rounded the edges on the panels or done something to let us know. I mean, it becomes pretty clear from the context of the story, but it's not immediately obvious. So we do flashback. It's not clear how many years it's been either that Superman is remembering back, but we see him there as Clark Kent wearing a suit and a tie, and he's thinking, wow, in the months since I left Smallville, so it does give us some context there. I've been all over the world, but Metropolis still blows me away. So he finds a hotel room, and he says, what I really need to do is find a job so I can pay for this room. And he thinks he's going to walk around and do a little sightseeing. And it's not long before he decides that it's dark enough, it's twilight, that he can get a better view with the higher vantage point, and he walks into an alley and then flies up through the air. Win Mortimer, his art, you can tell, is definitely influenced by Kurt Swan. It doesn't have quite the charm or the polish that Swan's art does. I mean, Swan's, you know, a legend when it comes to Superman, and for probably several generations of Superman readers, if you ask them to picture what Superman looks like in their mind, in terms of, you know, an illustration, this Swan picture is what they're going to call to mind, perhaps a Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, but that's for a later generation. For a certain generation of readers, and as I said, probably two generations, it's definitely Kurt Swan. So it's not surprising that Win Mortimer would be so heavily influenced, and you can really see that influence in the way he lays out the characters in the panel, the way he has Superman look, or Clark Kent in this case, look when he's flying through the air. And again, it doesn't quite have the charm or the polish that Swan has, but it's done very, very well, and it adds to the story in a way you might not necessarily expect. And that's the fact that this is an early adventure for Superman, for Clark Kent. You know, he's not used to flying through the air. He looks a bit awkward, especially being that he's in a suit, basically, a jacket and a tie. So it shows us, again, this is early Superman, this is early Clark. He doesn't have the costume yet, and he's trying to decide how best to help. So as he's flying over Metropolis, he spots some trouble. There's a gang that's holed up in an abandoned building, and they're firing automatic weapons down at the police. And in fact, they have a LexCorp urban assault cannon that they've stolen. Somebody hired them to steal it, basically. But because they're pinned down by the police, they decide they're going to actually try to use it against the police to try to escape. So Clark happens upon this scene, and he's trying to figure out how best to help. So he sneaks in through the window of the abandoned building, and he's flying again inside, bit of an awkward pose, thinking to himself, if he flies, then he won't cause any creaking of any floorboards, and he'll hopefully be able to sneak up on these thieves. And again, showing that this is this early days, when he does encounter one of the thieves, he tries to pull his punch and be very careful not to hurt this guy. He says, my softest tap should take care of this guy. But as he punches him, he thinks to himself, oops, oh no, I broke his jaw. I'm going to have to find some way to practice if I'm not going to hurt people unnecessarily. So the other two thieves that are there didn't hear the ruckus. Clark peers through the wall with his X-ray vision, and he notices that they're about to fire this assault cannon, and he can't let that happen. So he jumps out a nearby window and at super speed grabs the shell before it can hit any of the vehicles below. And he's moving so fast that neither the police below nor the hoodlums realize what happened. And everybody's a bit confused. One of the thieves accuse the other of loading it wrong, and the other one's saying, "You must have fired it wrong." And he says, "There's only one button." There's all right. Well, let's try it again. So try again. They do, but Superman again grabs the shell at super speed, and this gives the police below some confidence, and they start to sort of come out of hiding, to come up out of cover. They call up and say, "You creeps should surrender, throw down your weapons, and come out." And at that moment, there's actually a fourth thief in the gang, and the one that Superman knocked out was going to relieve this guy at the back door. And he says, "Hey, what happened to Bobby? He was supposed to have relieved me at the back door." And Clarence is too busy, the leader of the gang's too busy for that. One of the hoodlums says, "Don't ask no questions, Steve." Clarence ain't in the mood. Meanwhile, Clarence decides that they're going to resume firing with their automatic weapons rather than trying to use the assault cannon. And Clark, who's now on top of the building, says, "Uh-oh, you know, the police have sort of wandered out into the open. They're unprotected. Let me use my heat vision to stop these bullets that are being fired." So again, the thieves are like, how is this happening? None of our weapons that we're firing are actually, the projectiles aren't actually getting down there to the police. Like, what the heck's going on? So meanwhile, Clark takes one of the shells, the explosive shells that he grabbed at super speed, and throws it toward the back of the building and blasts a hole in the roof. This causes the three remaining thieves, the ones that aren't unconscious, to decide to flee. Like, man, we got to get out of here. The cops are now using artillery on us. And as they flee down the stairs, again at super speed, so he won't be seen, he doesn't have a secret identity at this point, Superman basically splits the stairs in half, which then causes the thieves to lose their footing and basically slide right out the front door into the arms of the waiting police. So as Clark flies away, he thinks that's that, and I finished up just in time for me to keep my appointment with Dean Reynolds. So he has an appointment to go meet with the dean at Metropolis University, and apparently the deadline has already passed, or no, I'm sorry, it's that Smallville High doesn't have the necessary accreditation, despite Clark's good grades, to get him into Metropolis University. So the dean says, "Yeah, I'm not sure what we can do." But Clark says, "Well, you know, I was afraid that you might say that. I'm willing to take any tests you might feel are necessary to prove myself." And I guess the dean likes him, because, I mean, under no circumstances would any university do that these days, right? Make some kind of special exception. But, you know, I guess this was back in the day, and it is a comic. So the dean says, "Well, it's unusual, but on the chance you're really as good as your grades indicate, perhaps we can prepare something." And Clark says, "Hey, that's great. You know, all I'm asking for is a chance." And as he's walking through the streets, he thinks about the fact that the dean mentioned something about his Midwest accent. And Clark thinks to himself, "I should probably do something about losing that Midwest accent. People in the big cities can be judgmental about people they think are hicks. You know, they've got that Midwestern accent." And so as Clark is pondering that, he walks by a restaurant and he notices a help wanted sign within. And again, he thinks that, you know, he's got to find a job. He needs money. So he goes in and applies and gets a job washing dishes. But obviously he works very hard with that work ethic that's been instilled in him by Ma and Pa Kent. And before very long, he's working the grill as a short order cook and doing a great job because he uses his heat vision to speed up the cooking. And one of the waitresses takes a shine to him, saying, "You fill my orders faster than anyone, Clark. Do you have a microwave hidden under your shirt?" And her name is Ruby. I don't know that we ever see her outside of this issue. But as I said, she does take a pretty big shine to Clark, even though she's somewhat older than him. And she offers to give him a ride home one night. And as they walk out to her car, she not so subtly makes a pass at him, saying, "Oh, you're going to Metropolis University, huh?" And he says, "Well, I have my application in." She's like, "Well, just be careful. You know, you don't want to do too much too fast. And, you know, is that where your girlfriend goes also?" And he says, "Well, actually, I don't have a girlfriend." And Ruby leans over and kisses him, telling him that was a loan. And if he wants to pick up the interest, he's certainly welcome to do that. So to blow off some steam, he flies over the city again. And what's interesting, so he works this job where he's a short order cook and like a busboy, basically. But when he goes to leave the job, it's jacket and tie again. So he's once again flying over the city in, you know, long pants and a jacket with a tie, thinking to himself about how Ruby is pretty much the most direct woman that he's ever spent time with. You know, he's had a couple girlfriends over the years, nothing too serious, and obviously his relationship with Lana. But Ruby is an entirely different woman. And maybe summoned by those thoughts, we see a woman running down an alley and a car chasing her, looking to basically run her over. Clark can tell immediately that she's in trouble. And as she runs down this alley, there's a series of manhole covers. And Clark flies into one, flies beneath the car, comes up at a manhole cover right as the woman passes it, and basically grabs the axle, the rear axle of the car. And obviously it comes to a screeching halt, and the alleyway is actually too narrow for the two hoods in the car to even open their doors. And we also discovered that this woman is Lois Lane. And as she clambers over the car to escape, she says, "You'll forgive me if I walk all over you boys, but I have a story to turn in on your little mob. And if there's anything I've learned in 5 years at the Daily Planet, it's that Perry White is a demon for deadlines." So as she heads to the mouth of the alley, she sees the axle sitting there and says, "Maybe I'll leave this part out of the story. I've been working on a novel as well, and Perry's always given me a hard time that there's too much fiction instead of facts in my stories." So as Clark overhears that, he's kind of inspired. He says, "You know, I don't really have any career in mind, or I haven't. I just wanted a full education so I'd be better equipped to handle some of the terrible things that go on in the world, and I'd kind of, you know what side to take. But a job as a newspaper reporter, that might help me find out when people are in trouble and people need help, and plus it'd give me plenty of freedom of movement." So that's kind of the career path he's thinking he might take. But unfortunately, because of this encounter with Lois, he's late to get to a Metropolis University. And he thinks, "I hope I'm not too late for my exams." And the dean's pretty upset. He's like, "Well, I don't know how they teach you to tell time in Smallville, but with this institution, especially because we've gone out of our way to accommodate you, it seems like you could at least show up on time." And Clark tries to apologize, but the dean says, "Spare me your excuses. These are your exam papers. You would have had 4 hours to complete it, but since you decided not to arrive on time, you still have only until 1 o'clock. So Clark only has a couple of hours left, and he thinks, "Well, with only 2 hours to do 4 hours of work, I may have to cheat a little." And he thinks to himself, "I've always tried to avoid using my superpowers in normal situations, but if I write at super speed and use my heat vision to keep the pencil sharp as I wear them down, I may come in under the wire." And you also wonder, so is he if he's writing at super speed, couldn't he be done in like 5 minutes? But maybe that would look too obvious, whereas just keeping the pencil sharp wouldn't necessarily. So as he finishes up, he thinks to himself, I do feel a little bad about using my powers like that, but at least I can kind of placate myself by realizing that I knew all the answers to these questions from studying on my own, not something, you know, it's something that any normal person can do. But you kind of wonder about that, like, you know, he must read quicker than normal people, right? So anyway, it's kind of funny, as the janitor who's been waiting to go on his lunch break walks into the testing room, there's, I don't even know, 30 pencils laying on the ground, 30 little nubs of pencils. And he's like, "I thought there was only one kid in here. How could he go through that many pencils?" So a little bit silly, but as Superman hands in his papers to the dean, he says, "Well, if this is your idea of a joke," he's like, "Wait, they are all done, and they all look correct. If it's tests that would have taken 4 hours, I'm not sure how the dean would be able to flip through all of it and know it's all correct in a matter of moments. He must have super speed too. And he must be a very learned individual as well to know all the answers are correct. But again, comics, so just a way to show us that Clark knew his stuff and he did get into the university as the dean is once again buddy-buddy with him. He's no longer perturbed by Clark's lateness, saying, I must have underestimated you. You made an unfortunate start, but you get yourself a watch, and I'm sure you'll make a fine addition to the student population. So as Clark leaves, Ruby is there waiting for him, and he says, Ruby, how did you know where I'd be? He said, well, I waited outside of your apartment, and I saw you come out, and then I followed you. So Clark immediately suspicious, like, wait, you followed me, so you must know. Right, he must have seen that altercation with Lois, but turns out she said, "No, you're pretty fast. I lost you within a couple blocks, but I remembered you saying you had an appointment here, and so I took a chance and I headed over because you know universities are very small places. So if she headed over to the university knowing he had an appointment there, she of course would just pull up to the front of the university and spot him right away, which is exactly what happened. So." Anyway, Clark's happy to tell her that he's accepted, and she says, "Oh, well, let me buy you a hamburger to celebrate." And he says, "Actually, I was planning on continuing with the night job because I'm not independently wealthy, after all." And again, she reminds him that he's got to take it easy. He can't try to do too much, you know. He's like, "I know when I was your age, I felt pretty indestructible, but you can't overtax yourself. You got to go to school and hold down a job. Are you sure you can do it?" And Clark says, I was raised pretty tough in Smallville, so I think I can handle it." So it is nice that this woman kind of, I mean, clearly she has some romantic feelings for him as well with the kiss and such, but she's also kind of showing him the ropes, which again, I wonder why we didn't see her show up. And maybe she did, and I'm just not remembering it. Or maybe she showed up in something that I haven't read. But interesting here that she's such a big part of Clark's life for a couple of years anyway. Because as they leave the burger place and she drops Clark off at the hotel where he's still staying, she says, "Well, I'm glad to hear that they raised you tough in Smallville, because I was worried you'd be so worn out you wouldn't have time for anything but school and work. But clearly... they have time for more than that, because we get a little sort of montage piece here where we see Clark and Ruby in a rowboat. We see them working together. We see them bowling together. We see them reading books together. So it does seem like they have spent some time together over the ensuing years, because when we turn the page, time has passed rather quickly, with Clark saying, "I never expected this day to come so quickly." And Ruby says, "Yeah, 2 years. It seems only like 2 days since I first met you." And Clark's leaving his job. He says bye to Mr. Balducci, the owner of the restaurant. And as Ruby is there, she says, "Didn't you learn to say a proper goodbye, Clark?" And he says, I guess not, but let's skip saying goodbye and just say keep in touch." So I'm not sure why he's leaving the restaurant. It means that they can't spend time together anymore, but apparently it does. Apparently, you know, he's just going to be busy with his new job. It's not really clear, because this is pretty much the end of the flashback. He gives Ruby a hug and says, "You know, thanks for everything you did for me. I've picked up a few tricks along the way thanks to you." And Ruby thinks, "Yeah, hopefully you'll have a little space in your great big life that you're building for yourself to spend some time with me at some point." And she thinks to herself, "So long, baby, it was nice." And then we move back to present day. We see Superman in his costume. He's thinking Ruby. She was quite a lady back then. And if anyone was responsible for turning a farm boy into a city dweller, it was her. So again, it's lines like that that make me wish that this was more than just one issue, because I think there could have been some good, worthwhile stories there. So, as Superman flies over the suburbs, he's thinking, "It's been a while. Maybe I have time for a visit." And he lands and quickly changes into his Clark Kent persona, thinking, "The visit can't be a Superman. Ruby and I shared a lot in those 2 years, but not my greatest secret. As far as she's concerned, my greatest accomplishment is becoming one of the top reporters for the Daily Planet, and that's as much as she needs to know. So he goes and he knocks on the door. Ruby's there. So they embrace. Ruby says, I thought you'd forgotten about us. It's been 6 months. And he says, well, that was sloppy of me. How's Ed? And again, context here, we hear Ruby say, he's fine. You never did anything better than introduce the two of us. So clearly Clark did keep in touch to some extent, because he apparently introduced Ruby to her husband, and they even have a couple of kids, Carolyn and Drew. And the kids being kids, they immediately ask, did you bring us anything, Uncle Clark? And his response is, well, as a matter of fact, I asked Superman to stop by and take you for a ride one of these days. And they're overjoyed with that. And we get the blurb for next issue, Jimmy Olsen. So again, a quick issue, just giving us some background into Clark's first arriving in Metropolis and helping out kind of on the down low before he was in costume, and kind of learning the ropes, going to Metropolis University and all of that. But again, not to sound like a broken record here, I do feel like it's a missed opportunity, though. There's so much more that could have been done, and I think it really deserved its own four-issue miniseries, honestly. But something's better than nothing. And again, I just wonder if Ruby ever showed up. If any of you know that, you know she showed up again at some point, let me know, because I'd be very curious. It had been a long time since I'd read this issue, so I'd forgotten that this character even existed, because as Clark himself said, you know, she was a huge part of his life for a couple of years. And so you just kind of wonder why she didn't show up again, or you know, what the situation might have been with her and you know, meeting her husband and such. So as I said, the art is pretty solid for the issue. It definitely is Kurt Swan inspired, you can tell, but it's not quite as polished, and it is a little bit of its time in terms of 80s artwork, and you know, especially the coloring. It's pretty traditional, you know, primary palette, but this is before the days of computerized coloring and digital coloring. And so, you know, the colors don't necessarily pop right off the page, but it is a good story. It is a good issue, I should say. It covers a lot of ground really quickly, but I don't know that they necessarily had a choice, right? I think the Perry White issue was done a little better. It was a little more traditional in its flashbacks. And the Lois story was pretty much just one event that happened in her past that really showed us who Lois is now. Whereas this one seems like it tries to cover more time than either of those issues. And I think that's why it feels a little cramped and a little rushed. And I get that feeling that I'm left with the feeling of wanting more to the story. But again, it's not to say it's a bad issue. It was actually pretty fun to go back and read this and check out the artwork and just kind of take this trip down memory lane. It's definitely a lot of fun. And I think that, and obviously I haven't reread The World of Smallville in quite a while. That'll be coming up pretty soon on the chronology. But I remember The World of Metropolis being my favorite of the three World of series, you know, between World of Krypton, World of Metropolis, and World of Smallville. I think I did enjoy this one the most. And maybe that's just because it reminded me the most of the Man of Steel series. The covers were similar, with, you know, each issue focusing on one particular character, and obviously the theme of Superman running throughout. So that might have been why I enjoyed it the most. But anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Next time I'll be talking about one of the current Brian Michael Bendis issues of Superman, getting back on track with those. So want to make sure that you keep tuning in. We love to talk Superman on Superman Sundays. And I know there's a lot of you Superman fans out there, and you've been wondering where the Superman Sundays have been. Trying to get back on a regular schedule. As always, it's been tough ever since I fell behind. It feels nearly insurmountable to get caught up, but trying to do so. And as always, we thank you for listening and for engaging on social media and all of those things. At the Comic Source, we believe there's a comic book out there for everybody, as you've heard me say many, many times, and we couldn't do it and wouldn't do it without the support of all you listeners. So as always, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.